Okay, again. Right, so last time we saw the Gemara of Yeshua ben Gamla. And what I want to do is a little bit understand the drive behind the Takana, and then get into some of the details of the Takana. And as I mentioned, I sent out an English article that deals with at least some of the issues to make it easier as you're going through the Makarot. I see some smirks as if that's all you did, but that's okay. I hope that's not what that is. Okay. So the first point, which, you know, people make a big deal of, but to me it's right obvious. I honestly don't understand why so much space is given to this, so I didn't want to spend too much time on it. And a lot of the Achronim ask, well, I don't understand. How could you say it's a Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla? Isn't this a mitzvah d'oraisa? The answer is, yeah, I mean, at some level, this is an expression of the mitzvah d'oraisa, but clearly the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla is different in several ways, right? One is, obviously, even if you thought that, biblically speaking, you had to have communal framework to make sure people learn Torah, the exact details of how many per city, right, how many teachers, how many people per class, right, all of that is not in the Takana. But even more obviously is that the classic framing of the chiyuv of learning and teaching Talmud Torah is fundamentally on individuals and their parents. Right, the Takana is institutionalized, moving it towards a communally funded project, meaning even if, as the Gemara in Kiddushin outlines, if someone doesn't have a father, so then the community has to take responsibility for them, the notion that that translates into setting up an entire system, right? Because you could imagine that, look, parents teach their children, and orphans are taught by the community. The community provides a private tutor for them, right? The jump from there to institutionalizing an entire system obviously is an expansion on the biblical background. Of course, there's biblical values at play. So I don't really understand why people get too worked up on this. I don't want to spend too much time on it. Yeah. Good. So Yonatan goes even farther, and he says, I don't even understand why you have to go that far. Just say, fathers are not allowed to teach their kids, and in addition, there is a communal obligation to set up schools. It's a communal obligation. And as we have seen many times when we did the sugyot on Dav Zayin Chet Tet, there are many things where there's a biblical mitzvah involved, like tzedakah, and then there's a communal expression of that value, which is not quite identical to the mitzvah of tzedakah. It's taxes, it's social welfare. It's not identical. So you could say the same thing here. So let me, before I take Robbie's question, just look, I think this is the simple understanding of the sugya, some version of this. And if you look at Shulchan Aruch, you do get this feeling. So I just gave you Shulchan Aruch Simin Reish Mem Hei. So just for background, Simin Reish Mem Vav is the laws of Talmud Torah. So what is Simin Reish Mem Hei? It sounds like it's this division, that there's the personal obligation of Talmud Torah, and then there are communal implications, and those are two different halachot. So Reish Mem Hei goes like this. Mitzvah Asei Al Ha'ish L'Lameda Benot Torah. You're obligated by a biblical commandment to teach your son Torah. V'im lo limdo aviv chayav l'lameid atzmo. Your father doesn't teach you, so then you have to teach yourself. Sivav there is, hayam minhag b'yesh l'kech melameid tinokot schar. If the custom is that people take money to teach young children, chayav l'lamdo b'schar shikra b'torah shibichtav kula. You have to fund your child's education until they can read all of Tanakh. Okay? If it were reminder for the thousandth time that, yes, your basic obligation as a child in Torah is to know all of Tanakh. Yes, there's no escaping this reality. Yes, Adam. Achi kra Torah shebichtav kula. Until you read it, you go through it. I mean, I guess you could supervise the kid to make sure he gets through it, but you got it, all of it. He says actually yikra, so I read it, go through it. Proficient, you know, how proficient people should, uh, you know, you have to make sure that happens. How you do that, you know. I remember the first time, you know, coming from the same education system that you did, right? The first time I realized that it didn't have to be that way was when I was visiting cousins in Israel when I was in high school. And I think I was in high school. And they had a neighbor over who's at Zilberman's. Right? Zilberman's is like the Haredi system that tries to follow the Mishnah's outline for Limud Torah. So they learn all of Tanakh from the age of 5 to the age of 10, then Mishnah from 10 to 15, and they have no vacation during the year except for the days outlined in the Gemara, which is only, I think, Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, and they get out early on Friday, but they learn every other day of the year. They follow the, right? And I remember being floored by this 9-year-old kid, so he's towards the end of Tanakh, who was proficiently going through or chazaring Daniel. And, you know, I was very scared of this 9-year-old kid who know Daniel. But at that point, I committed that my kids would be able to do that, and, you know, so we're working on it. We're working on it, you know? A Zilberman school actually did open in Ephrat, but I didn't send my son. Story for another time. The Mishnah and Gemara, you don't have to pay to teach your kids. This is assuming you don't have the money. So then we force a parent to fund his child's Tanakh education. After that, if you're poor, we don't. If you have the money, you have the fund, you have the abilities, teach them everything. I'll take Rami and answer your question 1 second. I just want to see one more sif. And this is, but in Sif Zion, he says, Moshivin, Melamde Tinoko, Bechol Ir Ve'ir, and you put educators of these kids in each city, Bechol Ir She'ed Ma Melamde Tinoko, and any city that doesn't have a teacher of young kids, Machrimin Antir Tishiva Melamde Tinoko, put them in a Cherem until they have set up a school system. Vim Lo Ishivo, Machrim and Eir, and if not, destroy the city. She'ed Olam and Kayem, Elam Bevel P.M. Shal Tinoko Shabayd Rabban. Because the world is sustained by the Torah of young children. Right? So it does seem to be, if you follow his language, it's pretty clear that the distinction is personal obligations, which is Aleph through Vav. And then he says, in addition, there's a communal obligation. Right? And this is, again, distinct from the biblical version where it's supposed to be on parents if the parent doesn't do it. So then you have the backup. The child does it himself. The Beis Din takes care of the orphan. But the notion that lechatchila, there has to be a school system in place for everybody, whether or not they have parents, right, that system has to exist for them, that's clearly an expansion of the Doraisa. Right? That's clearly a different, again, it has biblical overtones and undertones and I don't know, whatever, right? But it's, what? Yes. It is clearly biblically, you know, important. No one's going to deny that, but the particular articulation of it is clearly a function of the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla. Yes, Rami Ezra. Okay, Ezra. You can't. For Melamne Tinokos. So the Gemara... It's a Gemara. So the Gemara in Nedarim Daf Lamed Zayin has two opinions. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to take money for Talmud Torah, mani bechinam afatem bechinam, right? Just like God taught the Torah for free, so you have to teach the Torah for free. So first of all, the Gemara says it's only Torah Shebal Peh, right? But not Torah Shebechtav because it was the teaching of, so teaching Ta'amim, Trup, you're allowed to charge. The more relevant one is the second, I think, for us, which is the Gemara says, and for little kids, you can pay because you're not fundamentally paying only for the education. You're paying for babysitting, right? For shimur yilavdim, right? For watching the kids, right? We all know this is true, right? The job of a second, third grade teacher is not just educational, right? If you had a teacher in second and third grade or whatever who said, listen, I'll teach the kids that choose to stay in the classroom and listen. But if the kids want to leave, that's their problem. You would fire that teacher, and rightly so. Right? At that age, there is classroom management and things like that, and you're allowed to pay for that because that's not the Torah itself. That's a necessity to make sure that the kids learn effectively, but you're not paying for the Torah, right? It's like my job, right? Like, sure, you could say I'm being paid for Talmud Torah and all the heterim, but to be fair, right, the mitzvah is to teach you guys Torah, to arrange guest speakers and to be involved in recruiting and things like that, right? That's not Torah. So, you know, without any shadiness, I could say, what do you mean? I'm paid for my administrative responsibilities, and I teach you out of the goodness of my heart, right? Because I love teaching Torah, which I do, right? To be fair, I do, right? Like, yeah. Right. So, because the institution is to say, look, it costs money. Even if it didn't cost money to pay the teachers to get the building, right, to get this, right, there are costs. So whatever it is you're paying for, the point is the government needs to make sure that there is, right, the community needs to make sure there is a communal educational system. You know, look, if the community had pulled off what the Catholic community had pulled off, right, why is Catholic school so cheap? Because most of the teachers are priests and nuns, right, who don't get paid or live on the convents or whatever they do because, you know, well, look, it doesn't hurt their financial cause that their spiritual leaders don't get married and have kids. That makes a big difference, right? The fact that, you know, rabbis tend to have more than zero kids, right, means that they can't subsist on what a priest and nun can, right? But if you manage to get a bunch of rabbis who were, you know, independently wealthy to all teach Torah, and you just need to provide the building or something, so like, so good. You're still responsible to make sure it gets set up, whatever it takes, right? You know, you could luck out. You know, there are examples of this in history, not a tremendous number of such examples, but there are such examples, you know. You know, great. There was a very wealthy person in Toronto who was like the Gadol of Toronto for many, many, many years, right, Price, who, yeah, I don't think he took a salary because, like, he was a very, very wealthy real estate mogul, you know. So, like, there are people like that. Yeah, there's some good examples out there of people like this. Yeah, but not everyone's like that. You know, the people who are like that, I don't know if they want to teach third grade, right? Like, sure, like, Hillel Lichtenstein gives a, you know, runs a weekly halacha podcast, which is excellent, right? I'm sure he doesn't take money for it because, you know, he's publicly, his public net worth, last I checked, was, you know, I think $1.7 billion. Like, and he runs a halacha headline, you know, it's a podcast called Headlines, which is very, very, very good. I'm sure he didn't take money, but I'm sure he also doesn't want to teach third graders, right? He teaches Torah once a week, the way he wants to, and he publishes Svarim. Good for him, right? But remember, you got to find someone. If you find a bunch of people like that who want to teach second grade, Ashrecha, your community doesn't have to find the money to fund it. If not, then you do. Yes. Fill into what? Svarim? Yeah. Right, look, in the end of the day, right, obviously you can charge for a sefer because there's a lot more, right, there's a lot of work that goes into, right, you don't even have to get into, obviously, for a sefer, there's a lot more than just the writing of the sefer. There's the writing and the editing and the binding and the printing and the public, right, publicity and the font, right, choosing the fonts, and right? A lot of, look, nowadays it's much easier to justify because how many people do you know in any form of Talmud Torah enterprise where the only thing they have to do is teach Torah, right? And not give tests, grade tests, right? Write report cards, right? Deal with parent-teacher conferences, right? Administrative work, you know, whatever, right? Okay, fine. And then, right, Shulchan Aruch continues to summarize, Machnisim atinokot lehitlamed ben chamesh anim shleimot. You bring them in at five, v'pachon v'kani machnisim atovim v'kachot machnisim atovim ben shesh shanim shleimot. If he is, if he's weak, so you wait till he's six, finish his six. The Rama says, v'kol makom yachu ben shalosh shanim shleimot milamdeno ta'otiyot ha-Torah. But once he's 3 years old, you should at least start training him in basics, right? You train him in the letters. And in Siftet, he says, even if he can't read, don't kick him out. He'll absorb whatever. Okay, we'll come back to Siftet Vav, which is more of the details. But Siftet Vav and Siftet Zion are the number of kids per class requirement and the commuting issues. Okay? Now, the Kovachira makes a very interesting point, which I think the answer is obvious to the question, but it highlights what we're saying. Right? The Kovachira asks, why do you need all of this? Why don't you just say that the Gemara says that Talmidim harehem kibanim? Students are like children. So obviously you have to teach your children, including your students. So why do you need this whole takana? What? But so what does he say? Right, so he's at Mishen Lav Loya Lomade. Dichtilato the Mekashak, Tivishanachaim Badim. Don't we say that your sons include your students? What's the obvious answer? More obvious. He says, Vadai, Mishashikvar, who tell me no Mikribino? Maybe your students are called your children once they are your students. But if you haven't yet taken them as your students, you're not obligated to make them your students, right? But I think what that highlights is that, yeah, but that's what the Takana changed, right? The Takana created a situation in which proactively there have to be teachers who will have students, right? Obviously, if someone chooses to teach their students, so great, that solidifies a certain halakhic relationship. But the Takana goes farther. Okay. Fine, that's a little bit of background. Let's move to the first halakhic question, which is the question of class size. Okay? So, the Gemara had said that what's the magic number for classes? You understand? 25. Very good. So now you tell me. 25. 25. Great. 25 what? What does 25 mean? The Gemara says that your classes are 25, and if there's 40, you set up a assistant teacher. What is the question? We already talked about it on Sunday, I think. Sunday? Monday? When did I see you last? I don't even... Monday. Sunday was your trip, right. Yeah. So, what is the question you need to answer? What does this limit... Right, what does this number mean? 25 students, what? So, you tell me the possibilities, and tell me... Right, now, we're going to see that the question of class size is going to be integrally connected to the question of commuting. Right, or what are these limitations that the Gemara puts on forcing poor children to commute? Not poor as in not have money, but I feel bad for kids who have to commute. You know, all I can think of in this Gemara is how many hours I sat in traffic from Rambam back to Staten Island. That's all I can think of. It is sheer torture. Really, how long did it take you? Not that the Mass Pike is better. The Mass Pike is Gehenna. I hate the Mass Pike. I can tell you my nightmare stories from the Mass Pike. Is that what you took? The Mass Pike. Or the Massachusetts? No, what'd you take? Really? I guess it's better than that road, because that road is horrible. During rush hour, that road is... Oh. Diamond once made us take him. We were going to Harvard for Shabbos from YU, and Diamond said, it won't take you so long just to make a detour and drop us off in Sharon. Ugh. That was not true. We managed to get into the Eruv in Harvard, in Cambridge, during the 18 minutes, and park the car in a random parking lot, and then ended up having to rely on the fact that you're allowed to do a Mira Lanachri during Ben HaShemashot and have a guy drive the car during Ben HaShemashot to the Harvard Hillel. We have never forgiven him for that. I'm just saying. The traffic was so bad. It was crazy. We were literally in this parking lot in a supermarket in Cambridge, and one of my friends just stopped people randomly in the supermarket and said, "Are you Jewish?" And waited for someone who was crazy enough to stop and actually talk to us and say, "No, I'm not Jewish." At which point he said, "Well, we're Jewish, and the Sabbath has descended upon us, and we cannot drive our car, but we are stuck here in a parking lot that says they will tow the car. We have like 15 minutes to finish Russia. Would you drive our car to the Harvard Hillel?" Which, I don't know why any woman in her right mind would get into a car with that, with four, like, 20-year-old guys. I have no idea, but she did. It was a really crazy. And then she said, "Does it matter if I have a driver's license?" Yeah. We're like, honestly, no. We just really don't care. And she's like, "No, you don't understand. I have a driver's license, just not in America. I have a driver's license in my hometown of Hamburg." We're like, Hamburg. Hamburg, Germany. We're like, you know what? Whatever. That's good enough. I just don't care. And she's like, "But you have to hold my dog." So he like, it was really, that was a nightmare story. And yes, we Ad Hayom, we blame Diamond, I'm just saying. And it's Diamond and the Mass Pike, and that's why, yes, I do have nightmares of that highway also. Great story. We were known as the YU guys who showed up in a car on Shabbos. That was really wonderful. Wonderful times. We're like, it was Amir al-Nachri Ben HaShemashot. What do you want from us? Anyways. Fun times. Really, really, really nightmare scenario. Never do that. Never leave. To be fair, and I'll end with this. To be fair, it's, what is it, 4 hours from Washington Heights to Boston area? We left ourselves like 7. It wasn't like we had left with no time at all. It was just traffic from like New Haven to Cambridge. Okay? That maybe means something to Gavi. I don't know if it means anything to the rest of you. But never do that. Since then, I have, like, never... I just don't travel on Shabbos unless I leave, like, you know, 7 in the morning. Yeah, what? Oh. Oh, terrible. Terrible. What? No. Okay, Yonatan, when I first started Rambam... They were still, it was 2002, so they were still checking every truck that went over every bridge in the city post 9/11. So I lived 3 miles from the Verrazano, I lived 3 miles from the Verrazano Bridge. It took 40 minutes to get to the Verrazano. That was the first leg of my trip before I even began the Verrazano, followed by the Belt Parkway, followed by the Rockaway Turnpike, right? Or Nassau Expressway, followed by the, you know, Rockaway Turnpike. I mean, it was so bad. It was so, you know. And it wasn't until 11th grade that I started giving Daf Yomi on the bus, right? That made things a little bit better for a while. Like, at least, you know, those are my first shiurim. Giving Daf Yomi on the nightmare commute from Rambam to Staten Island. What? The cycle restarted, yeah. Yeah, we started with the new cycle. Okay, so the Gemara says 25 people, and somehow this is supposed to be related to the commuting issue in some way, right? Meaning there's clearly some relationship, and this is what the Rishonim are trying to figure out. So, someone tell me, what might this 25 number mean? What does Tosfot think it means? Well, no, you can tell me whichever Rishon, but you have to tell me who you're quoting. What does Tosfot think it means? Minimum class size for what? Very good. Right, Tosfot says as follows. Sach mikri deradke chofei yinuke. Last Tosfot on the page. Tosfot said, Aval pachot mikan, ein b'nei ha'ir yecholin lachof ze et ze. Last year, lohem milameid. 25 means as follows. If there are less than 25 students, you cannot force the community to fund public education. Now, why is the commuting relevant to this discussion? Yeah, but I mean, practically, in what way does all the limitations on commuting weigh into Tosfot's position? Okay, I'll try it again. I'll just say it, okay? Tosfot thinks that the number is connected to the commuting because all the rules that the Gemara gives about commuting are supposed to tell you the radius in which those 25 people have to live in order to be able to force the community to fund public education. Meaning, the Gemara sets out rules and says, until this distance, you're allowed to force kids to commute. That means that within this distance, if you find 25 students, it's legitimate to force those students to force the community to fund the education for those students. But if 5 students live on one side of the river and the other 20 live on the other side of the river, so you can't force the 20 to go to the 5, you can't force the 5 to go to the 20, and therefore you can't force the community to set up any public education system whatsoever, because you can't force the students to travel. And without traveling, you don't hit the minimum number, and therefore you don't have a class. Right? So Tosfot thinks that the number 25 is the minimum number at which the community can ever be forced to set up a public system of education. Now, what would that mean? So what does it look like? You live in a city that only has 17 students, okay? With all the commuting limitations, you only have 17 students in the community. So according to Tosfot, what happens to those students? How do they learn Torah? Their parents. And if they don't have parents, what does it sound like? Simple understanding of Tosfot? Meaning they figure it out or tough luck, right? Meaning ideally, the community will find some way of giving them a private tutor, letting them join in somebody else's, but the community cannot be coerced into funding the education of those orphans, of those, or the parents who don't know how to teach their children. Right? That the simple understanding of Tosfot is that, and therefore, according to that simple understanding of Tosfot, the number of 25 is what? It's a limit on what? On what? Meaning that the 25 isn't for the good of the students. Right? This isn't a class size limitation for Tosfot. Right? Tosfot doesn't say, oh, 25 students per class is so that the students learn well. Tosfot says, I have no idea. Maybe students would be better in groups of 5. But there's a limit to what you can expect from the community. The 25-person class size is a minimum class size for the benefit, not of the kids, but of the community. Right? Is that the community can't be expected to fund small groups because small groups are expensive. Yes. Yeah. For Tosfot, it means if the whole community is less than 25 kids. So according to Tosfot, it sounds like, we'll see, the Aruch HaShulchan is going to challenge this conceptualization. But Tosfot thinks that less than 25 kids, the community just can't be coerced. So every parent teaches their kids, and whatever, you do what you can. Right? And if there's an orphan in the community, so either someone benevolently lets them join another group, right? Or the community pays for a private tutor for the orphans, but you can't force the community to create a public education system unless you have 25 kids in elementary school, right? You can't per grade, maybe not per grade, right? Per school. Yes. Ah, good. No, the whole community. The whole community. And that's part of, we'll come back to this. But yes, the funding model in Torah does seem to be the whole community, right? And there have been a lot of attempts, like the one I sent you from Rabbi Dr. Levine, to revive this. Right, I know there's a rabbi in Toronto who's been saying this for years, that the obligation is on the community, right? Not just and dafka, therefore, people who don't have kids in school should be required halachically to be contributing for their whole life, and that will lessen the burden on people who have kids in school, right? And he's, you know, people have suggested maybe the community should suggest a inheritance donation, right? That people leave a certain percent of their inheritance to a communal fund, to right? Because the reality right now is that, yeah, in halacha, it's not by the parents, it's the community. That's the whole point, right? The parents obviously have to contribute, and maybe more, right? Because they also have their personal obligation. But clearly, part of the obligation is communal, because it's talking about people who didn't have kids, and the community is funding. That's the whole point, is to make sure that everyone can fund it. So yes, and that's why people in right have been writing articles like that to say, well, what should a modern version that is respectful of the country of Yishuv and Gamla look like? Right? But no, it's the whole community. And yeah, I mean, that clarifies the point of Tosfot, which is, if there's less than 25 kids, so obviously every parent has to find a way to educate their kids. They have an obligation. The question is, can you force the community, meaning the people who don't have a personal obligation on their kids, to give up of their money? And the answer is, according to Tosfot, seemingly, less than 25, no. But once there's 25, yes. Right? Once there's 25, yes. Now, you know, you'll see Dr. Levine has a few footnotes there from Professor Kanterfogel, who we've mentioned before, also Rabbi Doctor, whatever. I have no particular order who I say Rabbi Doctor. I'm not real. Don't make diukim, okay? I know that some people do make diukim, right? Rabbi Dr. Jeffrey Wolf has said before, right, that when rabbis want to discredit him, they call him doctor or professor, right? They defrock him, right, and don't call him rabbi. And when academics want to discredit him, right, they'll refer to him as rabbi, right? Because that, right, people, it's always convenient, right? If you have, instead of looking at it as you have double qualification, it's, oh, you're part of academia, you're not really from, right? If you're not from enough for me. And, oh, you're a rabbi, you're not unbiased towards the sources, right? So I'm not making diukim like that. They all are rabbi doctors, they're all wonderful people, they're all becoming the chum, and this is not, okay? What? So Professor Kanterfogel, his first book was on education in the High Middle Ages, where he pointed out that basically, you know, the reality was in the area of the Balei Tosfot that there probably weren't any communal schools because the communities were tiny, right? The communities in France and Germany were really, really small. So, and you see this in all the early Tshuvot, they were all hiring malamdim. They weren't hiring teachers. They were, like, for schools, they were hiring private malamdim. It also affected other areas, right? There are some of these weird, funny tshuvot from Ashkenaz where people would say, how are we supposed to have a wedding in our city? Everybody in our city is pasul la'idot to everybody else because no one is farther than a first cousin, right? So, like, the size of the communities affected other things as well, right? You had to import people for edut because, you know, everyone was pasul. So that is, that's Tosfot. Yeah, you know what, let's look at the Rashba. Okay, but there's one more main perspective in the Rishonim, and that's what appears in the Rashba, it appears in the Ramban. I chose one at random, basically. And what's the other way of understanding the 25 student rule? How does the Rashba understand it? Yes. Yes. I sent you both the sources and an English article to summarize it in case you couldn't parse the source. So let's read it together. The Rashba says as follows. This is source 5. But, you know, actually, no, the Ramban did it first. Let's look at 4. Shamati sach mikri yinuke esrin v'chamisha. Shamati perusho shemaya be'erazim chamisha kofin b'nei ir et zed loshiv b'neihem ilamei tinokot. V'moa yusham elachav dalet ein kofin umisha yirtze yiskor rav libno. This seems to be how I would understand Tosfot. The Ramban says, I've heard someone say that less than 25, every parent funds his own kids' education if you want to. 25 and up, community has to get involved. Velo nirali. The Ramban says, I don't agree. Ela afilu shnayim shloshim mashivim melamed. What are you talking about? Even there's two or three kids. Ela lomer lachashu, ayusham elef, kovin aloshiv kolestin, chamisham melamed echad, kinufarish vazil. The point is that you can force people to accept classroom sizes of up to 25. So, according to Tosvot, the rule of 25 is completely for the good of who? The community. It's a limitation of communal funding. According to Ramban, he can't accept the possibility that post-Yoshua ben Gamla, there could be people in the community that just fall through the cracks, right? You have a city of 24 people, 24 kids, and 10 of them can afford private tutors, 14 of them can't. According to Tosfot, as the Ramban understands him, is 10 kids will learn Torah and 4 of them will perpetually be Amei Aretz. Sorry, right? Good luck. Nothing we can do for you. But we can't, your parents can't afford teachers and they don't know how to teach you. The community has nothing to do for you. Right? Ramban says that's impossible. It can't be that that's the case. So therefore, the Ramban says, no. The community obligation is to educate any and all children in the community. 25, what does 25 mean? What does 25 mean for the Ramban? Yeah, meaning you can't force people to hire for every 3 kids, right? Have 8 teachers for a group of 25. But you also can't force the kids to learn in classes of 100 or 1,000, right? 25 is a number which balances the obligation of the community with the good of the students. And the answer, right, and therefore what 25 means is up to 25, it's still quality education, and therefore the community is allowed to fund class sizes of up to 25 and not be forced to fund multiple classes of 12. But even if there's only 12 kids, you have to hire that first teacher. So let's start shaking this out here. If there are between 0 and 24 students, how many students does the community have to educate, according to Tosfot? 0. According to the Ramban? Whatever it is, 0 and 24. Very good. If there are 25 students, then 25 students, right? Now, this understanding affects not just the question of do you have to educate kids until that magic number of 25. It also affects the question of what is the role of that assistant teacher that the Gemara brought up? Yes, but when do we implement it? So look at the Rashba. The Rajva says, Iko Khamshin Matvinan Tre Arbay and Matvinan Reish Duchna. Af al Gav de Amrin Khamshin Matvinan Tre, even though we say at 50 students you get 2 teachers, Lavla Mera di Leko Khamshin Mamash Lo Matvinan Tre. Devada me Khamshin Varboyin, Nami Matvinan Tre, me de Amrin Arbay and Matvinan Reish Duchna. Alma le Malam Arvin Lo Sagi Reish Duchna. Okay, so what does he say? So here's the second implication of their machloket, which is, so 0 to 25 we've talked about. Now, 25 to 40, right? 25 to 40. How many teachers teach that class according to Tosfot? 25 to 39. 1. 40, how many people teach that class? No, Tosfot. 1 teacher and 1 assistant teacher. 50, how many people teach them? 2 teachers, right? So Tosfot thing, 0 to 24, no public education. 25 to 39, 1 teacher, up to a class of 39. Right, 25 is the minimum, not the maximum class size. 40, according to Tosfot, is 1 teacher and 1 assistant. That's 40 to 49. 50 is 2 teachers. Right? Yes? According to the Rashba, 0 to 24 is one teacher. Twenty-five to 40 is how many? One teacher, one assistant. 40 is two teachers, right? For the Rajba, 25 is the maximum class size you can have without an assistant. And up to 39, we can force you to suffice with a teacher and assistant. At 40, we already make you have two teachers, and that's 40 to 50, right? So the question of whether 25 is a minimum class size or the maximum class size also affects at what point you pull in the assistant. For Tosfot, 25 is the minimum class size, and one teacher can handle 25 to 39. 40 is a teacher and an assistant. 50 is two teachers. The Rajba, 0 to 24, is one teacher. 25 to 39 is a teacher and assistant. 40 and up is already two teachers, right? And then 50 would already be a teacher, right, above 50 teachers plus assistants, etc. Right? Now, I will point out that the Raja himself seems to have a different gear than the Gemara, where the cutoff is not 25, it's 24. So adjust everything I said, but move it down one. So I don't want to get, I don't know, right? That seems to be different gear so. But conceptually, it's the same. Whether you say 24 or 25 is that magic cutoff. Yes, Adam. What? So Ramban just didn't flesh it out. The Rajma is the same Beit Midrash. Right, so here it's really two Batei Midrash, Tosfot and the Ramban. Now, the nuance is 24, 25, but fundamentally, Ramban, Rajba, they're all on one side. Right? So again, according to Tosfot, the issue here is how much can we obligate the community to do? Less than 25? Zero. 25 to 39? One teacher. 39, 40? A teacher and assistant. 52 teachers. Right? The main question for Tosfot consistently is how much can we force the community to do? According to the Rajba, Ramban, that school, you're balancing the question of what can the community do versus what's good for the students. So according to Tosfot, 25 is not a minimum. Sorry, it's not a maximum class size. It's a minimum from the vantage point of communal funding. According to the Rajba, it's a maximum that you can have in a class before you start demanding assistant teachers, before you start breaking it up. Right? So they're coming at it from very different directions. And then he continues, Perish Mori, Rav Dochi, Yitzchak Hecha, the Sachru, Stam, Lelame, Kol Nyoko, the Irva, Kamasan, the Dochi, Katfei, Mesher, Varba, Stam, the Melta, Lava, Daiti, the Hemikre, Lubit, he thinks that the cutoff is at 24, and he says, and here let's get a nuance. There's really two ways of saying that 25 is a maximum class size. One is that we balance the needs of the children. The other is that we balance the needs of the, what does the Rajva say? Lav adaita de mikri lubilachudu. We balance the needs of the teacher. Right? There are three issues here. How much can we force the community to pay? What's best for the students? And what can we expect of teachers who we hire? So Tosfot judges the whole thing based on how much can we force the community to pay. The Rajba, the Ramban, balance that with what's best for students and teachers. So the way he understands it is up to 25, one teacher. Up to 24. More than 24. So already at 25, the teacher can't be expected to teach by himself, so you have to hire him as an assistant, right? Up to 40. At 40, it's not reasonable to expect even a teacher and assistant to teach. So you need to hire two teachers, right? So there's three factors here. Tosfot is only the communal model. The Rajba Ramban model balances what the community has to fund versus what's good for the students and what can be expected of teachers. Yes, Gavi. Yeah. You've never had a teaching assistant? What do you mean? When we were in New York, Orit was an assistant teacher for 1 year. The assistant teacher doesn't teach most of the classes. They're there to, you know, help deal with kids who are a little bit slower and need private help, or to help with classroom management, but not necessarily the teaching, right? The TA is in a front, right? Two teachers means two frontal teachers. Right? A teacher's assistant is there to make sure that the one teacher can deal with the class and deal with discipline and deal with, right, kids who might be falling behind, or, you know, a second pair of eyes. Correct. And the salary is lower usually, right? Right? Meaning hiring a teacher assistant is not as, right, think about it, right? Like, if we had a shear of 100 people, right? That would be a lot for me to handle during Seder, but not necessarily during Shear, right? I could give a 100-person Shear. I've given Shearim to hundreds of people, right? But during Seder, I couldn't be available to all of you, so we might not hire another Ram and divide that Shear. We might, but we might not. We might hire a Sholem Eshev, right? That Sholem Eshev doesn't have to prepare Shear, so they're not, they might not be paid as much as I would, because, you know, so a TA might not have to prepare class lessons, right? They might just be there to deal with discipline, right? So they might still be there from, let's say, the class is 9 to 12, right? But they're not preparing classes from 12 to 3, right? You pay them less. I don't think so. No, come on. If you know the difference between teachers and teacher assistants in salaries, you would not say it's a marginal difference, right? They're paid multiples of what they're of what the teachers are paid. But they're paid multiples, right? There's a reason that when I was in Gush, right, the night Seder Sholo Meshivim were kolol guys that they paid a few hundred shekel a month to sit in the Beit Midrash and be there for questions, and we weren't on payroll, right? Because that function is not as demanding, right? I'm not saying they paid us fairly as, you know, that's not what I'm saying. But, you know. It was people who basically were funded to be in kolel. This was like, you know, do it in the base 3 days a week at night, and like, we'll pay you a little bit extra. But we're not, you know, it's a very different role. Look, there's a reason that teachers in most countries don't teach a full 8 hours a day, even if they're considered full time. Right? Because the main teacher needs to prepare lessons. So if they're teaching in front of the class for 8 hours a day, then they might be working between preparing classes and grading papers and tests or whatever, 16 hours a day. Right? A teacher's assistant usually is really working a 9-to-5 job. Right? If they're working for 8 hours, they're in and out. And once they're out, they're out. They don't have to do report cards. They don't have to do, right? They don't have to deal with lesson plans. Right? That's the teacher's job. Right? It's a very different... It's a very different role. Like, look, remember when you had the class, the tikva class over Sukkot, right? The TA was there to make sure that the Zoom was on, and then they could close their camera and leave, and like, if there was like internet problems, they could pop in and out, right? They weren't there to teach the class, right? You don't pay the same to that person as you do to the person teaching, right? Reminder that, right, the classes went live. I'm giving a course in the next round for anyone who wants to join me. Party. It's going to be fun. I don't know who my TA will be, though. If you were going to the class for the TA. Yes. What? Halacha in the free market. Yes, yo. Is it arbitrary? I assume it's not arbitrary, right? I assume it's some assessment of communal funding needs and what teachers expected, right? It was reading the market. What? Oh, good. Very good. Hold that thought for a minute, okay? I hope to at least get through this today, okay? One second. Okay. The Ron adds from Rabbeinu Yonah, I just want to get this point out there, right? The Ron adds from Rabbeinu Yonah that even if you hired the teacher, I gave it to you in the Ron rather than Rabbeinu Yonah himself. It was just shorter. But Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Afilu sachru sham lamed kol tinor geir." Even if you hired one guy and said, teach everybody, you still have to give him an assistant teacher, because this time of the lava that day, Mikri lo iu belachod. He didn't think you wouldn't give him an assistant teacher. Okay. So now, let's try to at least get Yoho's question behind us today. Yoho asked me, and he says, wait a second, shouldn't this be subjective? So, you tell me, according to who, to whom, I don't know, right, according to which position, is this more likely to be a subjective standard than an objective standard? Tosfot or the Ramban? Tosfot or Dime, Ramban or Dime? What? Well, think about it. If the number to begin with was set up for the good of the students and the teachers, so then, what would happen in a world in which kids can't learn well in a group of 25? Then? You'd split up the group. Nah, maybe. According to Tosfot, it might not be. Because according to Tosfot, you might say, look, I agree that nowadays kids can only learn in groups of 5. But that's a big ask from the community. And in the end of the day, we're not saying, right? According to Tosfot, the main standard is how much can I demand from the community? And in the end of the day, even if kids will learn better in a groups of 5, hiring 5 teachers is very expensive. Okay, so Yoho doesn't want to buy what I just said. So who didn't buy what I just said? The Aruch HaShulchan, right? The Shulchan Aruch HaRav bought what I just said and said that according to Tosfot, no matter what, 25 is the minimum, right? You can't force the community, according to Tosfot, to hire a teacher for less than 25. According to Ramban, you can. According to the Ramban, therefore, maybe if kids can only learn in groups of 10, you'd have to hire for every 10, because the rule was set up for the good of the students, and if that changes, that changes. The Aruch HaShulchan isn't willing to buy that. The Aruch HaShulchan says, I can't believe that according to Tosfot, so let's see this inside, and this is what we'll do. We'll wrap up with today. Tomorrow we'll do the commuting issues. I want to just throw out there, I said this to Adam before, that how we understand this sugya is going to affect a very interesting modern question, which is, can the community be expected to pay for special education? Which is very expensive because you can't have big groups, right? According to Tosfot, it's a hard sell that within the halacha you can demand that. According to the Ramban and the Rajba, there's room, and this was a big machloket amongst the modern poskim. If you guys want to spend a day on that, or half a day on that, I have a source sheet ready. I'm going to give it an amudim, right? But I'm happy to do it with you guys. But these conceptual questions will affect that question, right? Because it's not just class size, right? It's what if people, by definition, just need smaller groups, and it's very expensive, right? Or like even more, like a shadow, right? Things like that. Okay. I gave you just a summary of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav in number 7, just because I guess I just did that because it was shorter. Yeah, I think I was doing that because it was shorter, from the Daf Al Adaf. He writes, Shulchan Aruch HaRav, Dibidavka Nokat Sach Mikre, Dar Dekot Ulegamara Dafka Sagin Lechad Lechafet Tinoko, Mishnah Magar Shetar Lazbrim Yafet Tarach Lamed Pachot Tinokot. He said, first of all, it sounds like this is only for Tanakh, right? Because the Tachan of Yishuv and Gamla is for Psukim. So it could be that for Gemara, you'll need smaller class size. And he says, you might have thought, that the kids you're teaching don't know Hebrew as a first language. It takes more to explain it to them. So you might have said, you need more teachers for 25. But he says the simple language of Shulchan Aruch is that you only need for 25. And in the Shulchan Aruch Rav, he says, why? Because as much as the kids might need it, the number of 25 wasn't set up for the good of the students, it was set up for the good of the community, to limit how much you could demand from them. But look at number 8, who quotes the Emunat Shmuel. The Pitzek Shuvah quotes the Emunat Shmuel. He says, Shechrit is very Shona. Avkadav denirli the shir chafei tinoka lo haya shayach rak bedorot haTalmud. Masha einkin bedorot halalu shenitzmatu alivavot v'yivsham la'echad b'sach chafei. So that was only then when 25 kids could learn successfully from one teacher. Valivai sheyasa yidei chovat b'sach afsara v'kolchken yud bet. He says, nowadays, 10, 12 max. That's how much kids can concentrate. Students of 10 to 12. So therefore, he said, in a community where they only had 10 students or 12 students, he forced them to hire a teacher. But what does that already show you? Which model does he seem to be Paskin like? Like the Ramban, he's saying it's about what students can handle. Though he mixes it a little bit, right? Which is, he thinks the community can be forced to hire teachers, but they can expect that the classes be filled to maximum capacity. But he thinks that maximum capacity is determined not by 25, but by the students in your time and place. And therefore, in your time and place, you only have 12, but that's the maximum class size. So you can demand that you have a teacher for 12. The Emunat Shmuel, though, it sounds like, let's say the maximum class size in your time is 12, but your community only has 6. So according to Emunat Shmuel, it sounds like he still wouldn't force it. Right? So that's another twist here, right? Where the Emunat Shmuel thinks that the class size is subjective, but he still thinks the community can only be forced to hire the maximum class size, but that standard changes, right? You could have imagined a slightly different model, which is, right, you need a teacher even for one student, right? And then you determine class size based on effectiveness. Now, what happens if you have less than 25? So we've assumed now that until now, the kids won't learn, right? But there's another possibility, which is that if you have less than 25 kids, what will the kids have to do? Commute, right? Meaning, and we'll see the commuting more tomorrow, but it could be that, look, up to 25, you can't force the community to set up the school, but despite the risks of commuting, if there's less than 25, we will force them to commute. So there's two ways of looking at it. Up to 25 students, we don't force you we don't make you responsible to set up a school. Or up to 25 students, we make the kids commute. What's the nafkamina? What if there's nowhere they can even commute to? Right? Meaning if you think that up to 25 is how much the community can be forced to pay, period. So then, even if there's nowhere to commute to, then you can't force the community to pay for students, right, to educate the 12 kids. But you could look at it differently, and you could say, up to 25, the community can't be expected to fund a local school if there's a school they could commute to. But even though it's somewhat dangerous on the roads, up to 25, we could say, look, it's too much of a burden. To set up a local school system, you have to go to the neighboring town. But if there's no neighboring town, you could say that everyone agrees you have to set up a school, right? So you see how everyone, right, the factors that go on here are effectiveness for students, expectations of teachers, limits on communal funding, and when can we expect people to risk commuting? And all those are balanced in different ways. So the way the Prisha takes it is less than 25, if there's somewhere there they can commute, so then you can force them to commute, even though it might be a little bit dangerous on the roads. But that implies that if there's nowhere to commute, less than 25, you'd agree with the Ramban. You have to set up a school, right? And that's why you have to keep this in mind for tomorrow when we get to the commuting things in earnest, okay? You know what? Yeah. let's pick up the Aruch HaShulchan tomorrow, okay? Because so far what we've seen is that according to Tosfot, it sounds like less than 25, you're not responsible to set up a communal education system at all, right? 25 to 40 to 39, teacher plus one, sorry, 20, according to Tosfot, 0 to 25, 24, nothing. 25 to 39, one teacher. 40, teacher and assistant, 52 teachers. Less than 25, you can't enforce anything. Possible variant on that is no. Maybe less than 25, you force to commute. But if there's nowhere to commute to, maybe even Tosfot would agree that you have to educate, right? That would seem to be a Prisha variant. According to the Ramban, Rajba, no, no, no. The numbers of 25 are not for the good of the community, they're for the good of students. So, up to 25, one teacher. Even less than 25. 25 to 39, teacher plus assistant. 40, two teachers. Right? Because these rules were formulated for the good of teachers and students. Another nafkamina is, what if kids can't learn in groups that big? So, according to Ramban, it's likely that you'd have to tweak it and now give kids teachers for every 12. According to Tosfot, not necessarily. Right? Because it's still more expensive to pay for groups of 12. Alternatively, if you think the Emunah at Shmuel works within Tosfot, you could say no. Tosfot is saying that the community can't be expected to pay for not full classes. But maybe class size is subjective. And maybe you could even construct a Tosfot S model, which is community can only be forced to pay if you can fill up a class. But maybe the class is determined subjectively. And therefore, if in your time a class is 12, as long as you have 12, you can force the community, maybe even for Tosfot. Okay, so far you've seen several versions of how this mixes and matches. Tomorrow, we'll try to finish this off. We'll see the Aruch HaShulchan, who doesn't believe that according to Tosfot, you can ever say less than 25, you don't have to pay for a teacher. He doesn't believe that's even possible. Okay? Then we'll deal with the commuting issue. Okay, where, read Rabbi Levine's summary of it in the English article. I gave you the Yaseh L'Charav, who deals with the question of, okay, what counts as commuting nowadays? Right? Like, my son has to get on a bus to go to school. But that's because he goes to school a 5-minute drive from my house. So the government pays for busing. Does that mean that they have to set up a school in, right, my community because he has to get on a bus? Right? Or what if the whole Gush has one school system? Right? Is that considered making kids commute, or is there like a limit? Right? So the Aseh L'Charav deals with this a little bit. I'll talk a little bit outside of some of the questions that came up of, is the real question safety or distance? Right? Meaning, is the reason that the Gemara didn't want people to commute was because of danger, and therefore nowadays, if someone can safely commute an hour, then you can't force people to set up a local school system. You have to let them commute. Right? Or is it about distance? Right? Simply, we know that making people commute diminishes their life expectancy because it makes them miserable. Right? We know this. This is like many studies have been done, like longitudinal, right? Big number studies in, you know, layman's terms here, right? Right? Where if you have to commute more than half hour a day, on average, your life is more miserable and your length of life is less. It's not a good reality, right? This is about distance. So the Modern Post can deal with this a bit. We'll talk about it. We'll finish that up tomorrow, I guess. Do you guys want to look briefly at the three tshuvot about special education?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do that. I either we'll get to it tomorrow, or we won't get to it tomorrow. We'll get to it on Sunday. I don't know. Okay? Bisader. Let's stop there.